Hello, hello. Sorry, brothers and sisters, for coming in late. Welcome everybody here, especially Brother Teo, for kindly coming here to share the Dharma knowledge with us. And tonight, the title is Understanding the Importance of Keeping Precepts and Practice of Dharma in Our Cultivation. And these two keeping precepts, that's sila, practicing dana, that one is generosity. We need these merits to support us so that we may have suitable and supportive conditions for the practice. Otherwise, we also know that sometimes people want to go for meditation or to go for talks, but they have obstructions, no supportive conditions, enabling them to attend the talks or to participate in meditation retreat. So in the cultivation, these are very important, and therefore I'll let Brother Teo give you more details on that, all right, when he takes over the mic. So before this, he takes over the mic, just an announcement is that for this Sunday, there will be a Sangika Dana for 7 months. This is in conjunction with the traditional Chinese practice of the Hungry Ghost Festival. So we, with as Buddhists with Dharma knowledge, we perform it in a more meaningful way and more efficacious way. That is by offering Sangika Dana and dedicating the merits to our departed relatives. That is more meaningful. Alright? So please take note and arrange your time, inform your relatives or friends or associates so that they may come to know of this activity that Tiratana will be organizing this Sunday. So please take note. Alright? And as usual, let us take please refuge and observe the precepts before Brother Teo takes over. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo
Sarana Gacchami. Okay. Just relax yourself. Yeah? Maintain some form of attention. Then we can start the Dhamma sharing. So once again, good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today's topic is very relevant and very useful. As you can see on the whiteboard, it is understanding the importance. The word to note is the importance of keeping precepts and taking, giving dana or cultivate the dana parami in our spiritual cultivation or spiritual path. Many people may not see the importance of this, because even many Buddhists may not really understand this. And most cultivators, especially those who are only very concerned with going for serious practice, like retreat or vipassana, they just want to become enlightened. So to them, cultivation, spiritual cultivation, is only about meditation. You have to spend a lot of time, devote your time, and seriously meditate. But if you don't understand the true message of the Buddha, the essential Dhamma that he has spoken, you will overlook these two factors, which are very, very important. Like Brother Tay rightfully mentioned, they are required, like prerequisite, to support your cultivation, to bring about all the wholesomeness of condition, so that you can progress along the path of Dhamma easily. So let us now recall to mind what are the essential Dhamma that the Buddha talked about that point towards the importance of these two cultivation. Anybody want to try? Which part of the teaching mentioned about this? Anybody? Essentially, the Buddha, when he talked about meditation, what does he mean? In the essential Dhamma, he actually mentioned it in many places. He summarized all of meditation as the middle way, the middle path, or Noble Eightfold Path. Then Noble Eightfold Path, he broke it down. He broke it down into three parts. What are the three parts? Very good. Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. So this one is a very important, essential Dhamma. Essentially, the Buddha said, meditation or cultivation of the spiritual cultivation can be broken now into Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. And this is actually the Noble Eightfold Path. And this one is the meditation. That's why you go into meditation without this understanding, you will not succeed. You will have problem. So Sila is number one. Without Sila, Samadhi does not develop. Then without Samadhi, wisdom cannot rise. Then there is another part which the Buddha always advised the lay people. When it comes to developing the good life, so that you can have good, what they call worldly life, followed by the spiritual life. So to the lay people, he will advise you also to do three things. What are the three things? Cultivate, Dana, Sila, and Bhavana. And what is this Bhavana? Bhavana is actually the meditative discipline, the cultivation of the mind to develop certain wisdom or insight into phenomena. So essentially, this bhavana is what this tool is all about. So this can be combined and become bhavana. That's why sila and bhavana constitute the meditation. But then the Buddha said, you need to have another one, dana parami, to help you to have better condition. And this dana parami is very important. This dana parami is translated as generosity. Parami. You must have generosity. Generosity is a type of giving. When you are very generous, you give. There are three categories of giving. First category is what? First category is what? Giving of what? Materialistic gifts. So, materialistic giving. And this one can be your money, offerings, like food, shelter, medication, and whatever that you can afford or generously give to people. Generosity in this particular sense is mostly worldly giving. You give because you have the means, and some is because you understand that giving is a very important parami for you to have the good life, because the right view with regards to all the things, the nature's law that governs life and existence are very important. That's why the Buddha talked about what they call the law of karma that governs all of living beings' life. So this law of karma, if you don't understand, then you don't have right view. Then you have delusion. Then you will become heedless. Then you will not believe in this. That's why most people will have this thinking because of selfishness. So because of selfishness, they will ask the question, why should I give? These people are lazy. Why don't they go and work? So if you have that type of what they call thinking or viewpoint conditioning, then chances are you will not give because you don't see the importance of this generosity, parami, or giving. First of all, it's materialistic giving. Giving of materialistic things, like we mentioned just now. The most common is also money, food, shelter, medicine, alms, and all those things. Or whatever offering that you offer, the requisite for the monks, like their daily need. The toothpaste, toothbrush, towel. Then even those things that the Sangha may need, then you can also give to society, organization that needs help. Then you can also help to relieve suffering, in time of crisis and all those things. So according to the Buddha, the nature's law that governs life and existence, which is the law of karma, is very powerful. Whenever you give, that is your parami. That is what you will reap. Because according to the Buddha, you reap what you sow. If you cultivate the parami of giving and generosity, you actually give back to your own nature. That's why the fruition of it is you will receive all this goodness. Because you reap what you sow. When you are generous and give all this, it will come back to you in some other form when you come to this world again, when you arise. You can be in any realm. Then the second category of give is what? Yeah? Give of what? No. Give of? Life. The gift of life is very important. Like when you save life, when people need certain type of category of blood, then you have that same category. Then when you are able to donate that type of blood to the blood bank, then when people in need benefit from it, you help save life. So the gift of life. Then organ also same. Like your eye or whatever that people can use to transplant. So you pledge your organ donation or whatever. That is also give. So when the law of karma operates in future, in whatever life, if there's a need for you to receive any of this because of your parami, there will be donors who will come and give it to you, offer it to you. That's why all these are parami. And when there is condition, you can pledge whatever. Then the third one is what? Give of? Give of truth. This one not necessary you must preach or teach. As long as you are able to contribute towards the propagation of Dhamma, the truth. Like when you do Sangha work, or help out in the sasana, then help out in the translation, development of all the so-called transcript texts. And also to make known all this availability of scheduled talk or Dhamma sharing, Dhamma discussion, seminar, conference and all those things, so that people can benefit and receive. Then even the offering to temple, it may appear like materialistic offering, giving. But because that way place is going to last very long, then there will be devotee cultivator who will come and practice and cultivate. Then whatever benefit they receive, it could be Dhamma or whatever. That is also part of the giving of truth. Then when you make offering or donation to Dhamma book that are in accordance, not the one that is without the real Dhamma. Because if you make offering to those, there is karmic effect. That's why you have to make sure that when you really want to support or fund whatever, you at least have some idea of what that thing is. Then when you are very sure, then you help in the offering, donation, the printing, distribution. Otherwise, you know what happened in the law of karma. You reap what you sow. If this is the method and the technique and the teaching that you encourage through your delusion, in future you come, you will meet such teachers, such teaching and such books. You will receive them back. Well, this is what you give to people. That's why you have to be very, very tactful when you want to come to making such offering. At least make sure that this book at least don't harm people, don't have any coming implication. It will not lead people astray. Then, by all means, no harm. So these three types of giving, they are very, very important in the sense that it can give rise to karmic conditioning, karmic fruition. So when you have this parami, means when you come, when you take birth, even as a living being or any being, you will receive materialistic support. Means you don't have to like struggle to stay alive, to even have the food and shelter, the three meals. You don't have to worry about all this. You will have very strong generosity parami to receive this, so that you are in the position to actually devote your time for cultivation. You can retire early, optional retirement and all those things. Then all this will support you because you can again make offering. Do all this generosity parami. So this is the first aspect of parami that you must understand. And when you give truth, the beauty is you will receive back truth. That's why it depends on what type of truth you give and what type of truth you support. You give the wrong, support the wrong, you will receive back the same one. Yeah, that is what you believe to be good. So this part, a lot of people didn't understand, get themselves entangled. So giving also have to be done with wisdom and understanding. Do you follow? Then give of life is very straightforward. Because sometimes, due to certain karmic from the past, your DNA may not be so good. You are born maybe, like they call OKU and all those things, with some defects. Then sometimes due to accident or what, you may lose something. Then sometimes due to the food you eat and all things, then your certain organ deteriorate. So if you have this parami, there will be condition for donors who will come forward and donate to you and offer to you. Then when you have the means, like you support all those hospitals that has all this program, then through all this support and funding, all these poor people get to perform their surgery, their operation, and they recover. So that give of materials they give to support all this, in future, even when you are born with very difficult condition, you will have the support of people who will support you. Like that day, Sui An told me, is it one of the monks got to do angel? Very good. Within one day or what, he sent out the WhatsApp. He already received offering and pledges 30,000. 30,000 within a short period. 7 hours, the money just came in. That's why you must have parami as a monk also. You will have all this type of support. Then it come back to you. So this will give you the opportunity to have good life, to have better life, to extend your life, so that you can have the time to devote for cultivation and all those things. Then the other last very important benefit of this is, these are merits. Merits. And with this dana parami, generosity parami, you can receive a lot of wholesomeness to perform merits. When you help society, when you help fellow living beings, even you help your family members and all those things, support them, do your duty, provide them with proper education and all those things. In future, you will have parents who will see to it that you have your proper education too. They will also send you to the best school. They are willing to sacrifice for you. But these are your parami. Then when you develop all this ability to do all this wholesomeness and parami, Like this line, you can know you can have the means to make offering. You should. And after you have done it, what will happen? Yeah? What will happen? You can invoke the power of words. Understand? That's why the Buddha also taught in our closing puja, we always chant Imina Punyang Kamena. What is it? Yeah? Punya is merit. By the power of this merit, may it arise the causes and conditions for this nature of yours to always avoid the foolish and the heedless. Meet out with the wise and the enlightened one so that Nibbana can be realized as soon as possible. So if you have such merits and you invoke the power of merits, then you can arise the causes and conditions to progress along the power of Dhamma. But that is the most powerful and most important aspiration. So when you invoke this power of merits for causes and conditions for you to avoid the foolish, the heedless, beat up the wise and the enlightened one, then you can receive Dhamma. You can receive truth from the wise one. And you will avoid falling into the evil path when you are with the heedless, the fools, the foolish. So you avoid the condition because they will influence you. They will cause your karmic nature to fall. So these are all the important reasons why dana is very important. Then with dana, you have the means to keep your precept. It's a lot easier. Why? You don't have to cheat to survive. Understand? You don't have to deceive. You don't have to be selfish. You don't have to do all those things that will bring about karmic negativity and all those things. So when you have this generosity parami, the Buddha said, the lay people also can have these three types of happiness that you can. I think four types of happiness that you can enjoy or have. The first is happiness of possession. You know that all this come about because of generosity parami. You have received it through proper means, means through your positive karmic parami of generosity, that you have generated the condition for all this wealth to come to you through the proper means. Means you don't cheat, you don't deceive, you don't receive all this money through improper way. So the happiness of possession will be the first type of happiness that you can enjoy or receive as a lay person. I still remember my first month's salary. I felt so much joy when I really received it, because I know I work for it. And this is from my own sweat, from my own hard work. Then after that, the second type of happiness is when you can use what you have, your materialistic wealth, or your money, your property, for the good of the many. Means for the good of your loved ones. You provide for them in whatever form. Yeah. Means like you support them to have the good life, the good education. Then whatever, like, you can afford, do up your home. Where it is a place where all your loved ones come back and stay most of the time, so that they can have all the good life. So this type of joy and happiness is very different when you have the means to help your loved ones, help your relatives, your own friends, colleagues, and people whom you have affinity with or relationship with. You feel very good. Even when you help society, there is a lot of joy. And at the same time, it's meritorious. That's why it's very powerful. And that type of joy will make you happy. then your life will become different. Then the third one is, you don't have to be in debt. You don't have to owe people money. You can pay off your debt. Then like the Buddha said, you can enjoy that time of happiness when you are free of debt. Happiness that comes with freedom from debt means you don't own the bank or anybody any money. Especially those who are in debt, they will experience a lot of unpleasant situation. They worry about the installment and all those things. Then when they are out of job, they also worry. The last one is, of course, the Buddha said, live a blameless life so that the wise one will not blame you. You must have the means to do that. So that whatever that you can resolve through money, then like my friend say, if money can solve, then it's not a serious problem. It's a simple problem. Or he say, it's not a problem. Whatever that can be resolved with money. So when you have that means, you can live a blameless life. Like small thing, in order to resolve it, you can just say, it's okay, I think I will pay for it. I will undertake to see to it. So you all don't have to argue over this. Then sometimes, because of certain misunderstanding, then if you have the means, you say, it's okay, I think, don't worry, I will just take care of it. You can just go ahead and continue your life. So these are the type of happiness and joy that you can have. Then the other second most important cultivation is precepts. From dana, we finish. We go to precept. Why is precept also important? In which part of the teaching did the Buddha mention it? So we already highlighted it, the essential Dhamma. So the whole of meditation, Noble Eightfold Path, constitute three parts. The first part is sila, then samadhi, then panya. Why is sila so important? Precept. This one comes from where? When you have your pre-puja, what do? You renew your precepts. Why did you do that? Why did the Buddha prescribe all this? That's why you have to do with understanding. You cannot just say, hey, Buddha say one, no. That's why I must keep my precept. Means what? You are no different from the Christian, no? God-fearing. Well, God say, thou shalt not kill. That's why I will not kill. But you don't understand why. Then no meaning, sir. Then you abstain from killing because you have this fear, acting out of fear, God-fearing. But when you do, your understanding is no longer acting out of fear or belief. It's doing it with understanding. And this understanding comes from where? In the Buddha's teaching, essential Dhamma, he mentioned it in many places. Come from where? Three evil roots is later. Later. When you understand the danger of these evil roots. When it comes to cultivation, that one will come in. When you want to cultivate precepts and all those things, that one will come in. But where else in the teaching? Of course, Eightfold Path will have, but it didn't tell you why you must do it. Eightfold Path say there is this sila cultivation inside there. But why is the sila so important? How come you must have right view? Give you a hint. Right view in regards to what? That is where it comes from, understand or not? When you have right view in regards to the law of karma, you will know why you have to keep your precept. Just in the five daily contemplation, what did the Buddha say? We are all born our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. We are what we are because of our karma. If you know that the law of karma is so powerful, and your life depends almost entirely on it, 99.999% depend on karma. Because you are born of it, you inherit everything, heir to it, and you are conditioned and supported by it. Every moment, every instant, you are what you are because of it. You cannot blame anything else. That's why I say you believe in feng shui, fortune teller, or I wish you luck. Because the main reason for your life is nothing else except your karma. If you don't take care of karma, nothing is going to work for you. All those have no meaning. Because the key is karma. So what is karma? The Buddha said, moral causation, you reap what you sow. Do good, because good. Do evil, because evil. You plant the seed of wholesomeness, you reap the fruit of wholesomeness. You plant the seed of evil, you receive the fruit of evil. So likewise, this giving comes from that understanding. The more you give, you reap what you sow, the more you receive. When you are kind to people, good to people, generous to people, sincere, respectful, have love, have goodness, kindness, all this will come back to you because this is your parami, your merits, your good action. That's why after right view is right thought, right speech, and right livelihood. Right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. So this is what that teaching is all about. When you have that right view, you will know what to do. That's why the Buddha says, how to avoid negative karma. How to avoid negative karma? You must understand what constitutes evil. And then only the three evil roots come into being. So to understand sila, you must understand what constitutes evil. And brings about karmic negativity. That's why the teaching fall into place. The three evil roots. Of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then after that is, when you have this, means wrong thought, wrong speech, and wrong action, and livelihood. So when you have all this, it constitutes evil. That's why Noble Eightfold Path is from right view, you realize that it is very important to cultivate right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Then you arise a four right effort to cultivate all this. And how do you cultivate? You must train your mind to have mindfulness, leading to heedfulness, so that you can see your evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then only you can keep your precepts. Otherwise, you cannot keep your precepts. Now you understand how the teaching come about. Then when the Buddha say, in order to avoid all evil, you must avoid these three evil roots. So you have to understand what constitute evil. The three evil roots you have to understand with in-depth understanding. We will go into this if we have time. Then the Buddha recommended the three advice. Dhammapada verse 183. All Buddhas, when they come, they will advise you the same. What is it? Avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind. Our standard Dhammapada verse 183. Sabba papasa akaranang. Papasa are evil. all evil has to be avoided. Then kusalesa upasampadan, kusala, wholesomeness. Wherever there is condition, you should try to do. Then the last one is sacitta pariyottapanam. Means you have to purify your mind to develop the wisdom so that you are not deluded by the first noble truth reality that can bring about suffering. Because sometimes despite your good life, the good generosity parami, your merits, you have wealth, you have money, you have property, you have maybe a good life, then successful career, then you become very famous. Man of authority, you don't understand. But then that alone does not guarantee happiness. You can still have problems, suffering, and be afflicted when you confront the first noble truth reality, especially birth, old age, sickness, and death. If you don't have the wisdom, all your money cannot help you. There's separation from loved ones, your property and wealth and all those things. Separation can happen in many ways, through death, natural disaster, divorce, relationship failure, and all those things. Then when you are with people whom you don't like, can you cope? When you cannot get what you want, when things don't go your way, can you still be at peace? Then of course the final summary, if you deludedly believe this form of mind is you, you develop attachment, clinging, grasping to this fine aggregate of form and mind. Then the Buddha said, through your self-delusion, you grasp and cling. Then you hold on to this fine aggregate of form and mind, which he called upadana khandas. Upadana is grasping. This fine aggregate of grasping are suffering. The moment you grasp and cling and hold, through this self-delusion, you will suffer. You can put it to test. This physical body of yours, when you believe it's yours, what will happen to you? Yeah? Through that delusion, you will worry about it, getting old, getting sick, and one day die. That's why you will suffer. You will become afflicted when you confront this reality. And the world has shown you a lot of examples. So all this, they are in the teaching. That's why in the five daily contemplation, the Buddha wants you to develop the initial wisdom through the first three contemplation to deal with the first noble truth reality. He said you have to reflect every day. This body of ours is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die, for he has not gone beyond old age, sickness and death. But this is only element, not you. Go the way of nature, cannot be otherwise. That's why if you deludedly believe it's you and want it to be otherwise, don't get sick, don't get old and die. There is no such thing. So this aspect of the teaching is not understood by most Buddhists. That's why they cannot develop the actual cultivation. So if you look back at what the Buddha has taught, he said, all evil has to be avoided. That's why he taught us the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, and tell us what constitutes evil. How come it's so powerful? The evil roots are root of all evil. They make you evil. That's why when you are evil, your karma will fall. Because it will lead to violation of precept. Because evil people dare to harm, kill, deceive, misappropriate, lie, and do a lot of funny things. So evil people will actually plant the seed of evil because they become evil because of the evil roots, the root of all evil. That's why when you got hatred in you, anger in you, violence in you, you become evil. When you have selfishness in you, you become very evil. So the evil roots come from self-delusion, believing that you exist. That's why the Buddha said, from this self-delusion, you want to own, you want to possess, you want to hold on to things. That's why you become selfish. you become emotional. You can become violent when you cannot get what you want. Then because you believe you are real, you exist. When things don't go your way, you suffer, you become miserable. That's why all your sorrow, lamentation, fear, worry, anxiety, they will arise. And when you cannot understand what is going on, you develop fear, you develop doubt. These are all mental states that are negative, mental hindrances. Fear, worry, anxiety lead to restlessness of mind. That's why these are evil roots, mental hindrance. Sensual desire and ill will are also mental hindrance, the evil roots of greed and hatred. So the Buddha said, in order to avoid all evil, you must keep your precepts. That's why he introduced the five precepts, which are the basic moral rules that you cannot violate. Because whoever violate, they have the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. We already went through. Take for example the first precept. Who killed? Who harmed? That's why I say you have to undertake the training rule to abstain from killing and causing harm to fellow beings. How to do that? You must develop mindfulness, heedfulness, to see your mental intention clearly. Because when you have selfishness, when you become angry, emotional, or deluded, you dare to kill and harm. That's why these are the people who will break this precept, violate this precept, because they are evil people. They have this evil root of selfishness, greed, emotional negativity, delusion, and all those things. That's why they will violate the precept. They will break the precept. They are heedless. They don't care. They don't understand the law of karma. Or they refuse to believe. That's why they dare to do all those things for short-term gain because of selfishness. Because of fear. That's why when they say, due to your insecurity, you try to protect yourself, you are even willing to go to the extent of killing and harming other people, yeah, who threatens you. That's how war come about, conflict come about, argument come about. And yesterday, I think you saw in the paper, through Facebook, what happened? Yeah? It led to killing, you know. Just the Facebook exchange, like that. And one group of lady came out and went to the house and killed or harmed. How? Through anger, hatred, delusion, wrong speech, not knowing the Dhamma, don't have the proper understanding of the importance of sila. So precept comes about because this is something that the Buddha has introduced to guide you in your life so that you will not fall. You can avoid all these five evils that arise due to breaking of the five precepts, then you would have avoided most of the major evil. Means the major karmic negativity that arise through these five precepts, you already can avoid. Means you have followed the first advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil. Then to do good is very simple. To cultivate goodness, wholesomeness. The absence of evil is good. That's why when you have no more evil roots, you are incapable of selfishness, incapable of emotion, karmic negativity, fear, worry, anxiety, delusion. When you don't cling on to the self, the ego, then you realize you will develop a type of understanding, wisdom, that will allow your nature to expand and become beautiful. Then you see the beauty of the teaching, Noble Eightfold Path. How from this right view, you can avoid all evil and develop the opposite, non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. Through cultivating right thought, right speech, right action, no more negativity, and right livelihood. Then the four, right effort to constantly purify. The first right effort is what? Whenever any wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, or wrong livelihood that has a reason, you have to arise the right effort to abandon it. Have you cultivated that? Yeah. But to cultivate that, you must understand what constitutes evil. If you just say greed, hatred, delusion to me, no meaning. It does not help you. Yeah. So, we will go into that. I hope we have time. The greed, hatred, and delusion. So when you have mindfulness, awareness, then you will know how to trace the mental intention behind every action that you arise, every speech that you arise, and every thought that you arise. You can see the evil root within. Then you have to arise the right effort to abandon them. Then later on, as you are more and more skillful, when you have more and more understanding, when you have straightened your view, then when you have seen the danger of all this, then you can arise the right effort to prevent it from arising. Then the next two right effort is to cultivate the right thought, right speech, right action that are still not in you, the wholesomeness, the virtuous parami, that are still not in you, like generosity, kindness, goodness, gentleness, sincerity, honesty, respect, gratitude, contentment. All this, you have to cultivate them. Pleasantness of character. That's how you can actually develop all the appropriate right speech to bring about harmony, love, understanding, care, compassion, sympathetic joy. That's how you learn to rejoice. Instead of having envy and jealousy, you open up your heart, you radiate love and metta. You have love, you have compassion, you have kindness, you have goodness. All these are very conducive for wholesome karma. Then your life becomes beautiful. Then because of this nature's law of karma, all this goodness will come back to you. People will be kind to you, good to you. They will have pleasantness and goodness. They will respect you. They will have a lot of understanding towards you. So this is how the cultivation is to be developed. Then, of course, the last right effort is to continue to arise the right effort to refine upon all this right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood that you have developed. Refine upon it and perfect it so that it become a part of your nature, so that you are incapable of negativity, so that you are the embodiment of the Noble Eightfold Path. Then after that, your mindfulness, heedfulness, by then, should have been very stable. Otherwise, you cannot do all those things. Then when sati and samadhi fall into place, panya keep on arising. This is what the five spiritual faculty is all about. Sada, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya. When the spiritual faculty is there, the mental hindrances are gone. Then spiritual cultivation become very easy. That's why without sati, without mindfulness, without heedfulness, you cannot start. Then like the Buddha, every time when he administered the precept, he even taught the monk. What did he tell the monk? Precept after you end your renewal of precept. What did the monk chant? Silena sukang ting yanti. Silena boga sampadan. Silena nibuntin yanti. What does it mean? Precept is the source of what? Sukang ting yanti is what? From the word sukang. Happiness. Understand or not? Then, boga sampadan is what? Spiritual wealth. Precept is the source of spiritual wealth. Then the last one is nibbuntiyanti, source of peacefulness. If you keep your precept, you will have all this quality because it will bring forth the joy, the happiness. When you don't harm people, when you don't deceive and cheat people, there is a type of joy, understand not? Because when you don't do this, you will have the good life. You will be happy most of the time. Because when you keep your precept, you not only don't harm others, you don't cause your own karmic negativity to arise. Means your own karma will be taken care of. You will not have negative karma that will lead to downfall, to the negative fruition of all this karmic negativity that will make your life miserable because you are born of it, had to eat, conditioned and supported by it. And you are what you are because of it. So when you have a lot of joy, a lot of happiness, then when you have a lot of peacefulness in your mind, you can meditate in that. True or not? Because when you keep your precept, you will have a lot of peacefulness, source of peacefulness. Why? Because you don't cheat, you don't deceive. You don't worry about your spouse coming after you, finding out that you cheated him or her. Understand? You don't kill and harm, you got no enemy, you got no more problem. You don't steal, don't deceive, don't misappropriate. There is no CBT and all those problems. Understand? Then if you don't commit sexual misconduct, if you don't lie and create all the harsh speech, you don't have problem with other people. Then if you don't partake intoxicant drug and land yourself into all those heedless consciousness that can bring about downfall, that can lead to all the violation of the other four precepts, then your mind becomes different. That's why precept is the source of happiness, peacefulness. That spiritual wealth is because when you keep your precept, you actually cultivating the Dhamma. That's why you will go to temple, you will attend Dhamma talk. Then you will receive Dhamma. Then when you partake in all those dana offering, again generosity, when you offer dana to the monks, like your Sanghika dana coming, all this, then there is a lot of parami. And not only parami, in return, what do they give you back? They will chant for your protection, blessing. Then they will share with you the Dhamma. They will re-emphasize the importance of precepts. And through all this, you will understand clearly what the teaching is. That's why this is a very powerful teaching. Then you remember this book. I don't know how many of you have read The Essential Dhamma as taught by the Buddha, of Lord Buddha. This is based on the Dana, house Dana at Brother Sia and Sister Nancy's house last year, I think. 20th June 2016, 1 year, slightly more than 1 year. How many of you have read this? Wow, so few. I tell you, you don't know what you are holding. This is the gem. And these were all spoken during that house dana. I will read to you so that some of you can recall and benefit. For those who haven't read, I advise you to go and read. The Essential Dhamma of Lord Buddha, based on a direct transcript from the recording of Brother Theo's Dhamma sharing held at Brother Sia and Sister Nancy's house dana dated 20th June 2015. So, I started off by saying, just relax yourself, get yourself seated and maintain some form of attentiveness. Yeah. Then attentiveness has to come with the faith, sadha and virya. So maintain some form of faith within you, sadha, virya, spiritual zeal, and attentiveness. Attentiveness is silent awareness. When you're attentive, you don't think, you're just aware, silent. That's why you're very attentive. You want to listen. You just want to understand. You don't think. Attentive. So attentiveness is silent awareness before the knowing, which is already sati or mindfulness. You don't have to try to be mindful, force yourself to be mindful, no such thing. The moment you are silent, without thought, you are already mindful. You are already attentive. The moment you are attentive without thought, you are already in sati. So when you are attentively listening without thinking, without thought, that is true listening. Now you understand. This is what we call the art of listening. When you listen without verbalization, without chattering, without any reaction from your knowledge and memory. That is the silent mind listening. You just listen with an open mind. Then whatever you listen, you can absorb very clearly. Then if there is something not in accordance, you will also understand, but you will not prejudge. So Dhamma is about learning how to silence your mind more and more and be more and more attentive in life. The moment you are attentive, you are already aware because you are not lost in thought, you are not heedlessly thinking. So today, before we start the Dhamma sharing, we would like to once again thank the host, Brother Sia, Sister Nancy and family, for hosting this wonderful house dana for us to have the condition to come and partake in all this wholesomeness. And together we can also have this rather meaningful gathering of Kayanamitas come fellowship. So shall we rejoice? That's why we chant, eh? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then after that, the proper Dhamma sharing by Brother Teo. The topic is precept and virtue. That's why this is very important. Then I say, I would like to thank all Kayamita who can make it to here today. Sorry, who can make it to be here today to partake and rejoice in all this wholesomeness. At the same time, we can learn to develop more and more of this good mind state, which are very wholesome and virtuous. Virtue is very important. Virtue are your goodness, your kindness, your gentleness, your whatever good mind state. They constitute wholesomeness. What is virtue? Opposite of evil, understand that? Yeah. That's why you have to keep your precept, cultivate virtue, wholesomeness. A person who can keep his precept has virtue. And now you understand. If you are incapable of evil, you are already good. And now you understand why I say don't try to be good. You understand, huh? Trying to be good is good according to you, understand, huh? You always use this against your child, your children. Boy, told you not to do, you do. Then your reason is what? Good for you, but bad for boy, understand, huh? So you don't look at the other opposite. Good according to who? But if you are incapable of wrong speech, wrong action and wrong thought, then you are already good. The absence of evil is good, not trying to be good. Trying to be good got no meaning. Where the thought that try is deluded. If the thought is deluded, how can it have goodness? It will make believe that this is good according to him or her. So this is where most living being and cultivator make mistake. If you are a virtuous person, you have no negative thought. That is why you cannot violate the precept. That's why the Arya, Sotapan, automatic, they cannot break the precept. Even the Sotapan. You cannot kill, you cannot harm, you cannot deceive, cheat, or commit sexual misconduct. And you cannot give rise to inappropriate speeches that can hurt and harm people. You will not consume intoxicant that will make your consciousness very low. And because of that, the Buddha said, keeping your precept or cultivating virtue is a source of true happiness, true spiritual wealth, and true spiritual peacefulness of mind. The monk will chant this in Pali for you to understand after having administered the five precepts. They will chant, Imani Pancha Sikha Padani. The meaning is, these are the five precepts. Then the monk will chant again, Silena Sukanti Yanti. Means, virtue is the source of true peacefulness of mind. True happiness of mind. Then Silena Bhoga Sampada. Virtue is the source of true spiritual wealth. Then the third one is Silena Nibuntinyanti, means virtue is the source of true peacefulness of mind. Then Tasma Silang Visodaye. So therefore, let virtue be purified. That's why you have to keep this five precepts to avoid evil, so that you are incapable of evil. Hence, keeping precepts can bring about a lot of happiness and a lot of joy to you. You must learn how to develop this happiness and joy. Sadhu is rejoicing in the wholesomeness of others. When you are able to witness them doing all the wholesomeness, you rejoice by saying, Sadhu. We can rejoice in other people's generosity, sincerity, and faith, seeing how they help prepare and make all those offerings. All this can lead to a lot of wholesomeness, meritorious condition. There is a lot of synergy too, because for cultivators who understand, they not only rejoice, but they will also radiate their pure wish, and in return, all those who have partake in this dana offering will also receive all these merits. Just like the monk, if you support them, they support you back in kind, in the form of dhamma sharing, via their understanding. They will also rejoice. They will help you invoke the appropriate pure wish. Then they will also chant for your blessing and teaching and teach you the Dhamma. In return, you receive spiritual wealth. So that is why the Buddha said sila or virtue is not only the source of true happiness, it is also the source of true spiritual wealth. And they, most of the time, chant this type of blessing for you, the four blessings the living being need. Ayu, wana, sukang, palang. They will always end with that blessing. Ayu is long life. Sukang is joy, happiness. To live life, you must have this quality. Then, the third one is Ayu, wana, sukang. Oh, sorry, wana is pure complexion, good complexion. Then, sukang is of course happiness and joy. Then the last one is palang, strength, both physical and mental strength. Spiritual wealth is wealth that cannot be taken away, not like materialistic wealth that can disappear. Spiritual wealth is accumulated within your spiritual nature. And when you connect via your meditation, it will support you all the way. Then when you keep your precept of virtue, you will have a lot of mental peacefulness. That is why it's a source of true peacefulness. The serene, calm, and tranquil mind will arise. The mind will have little or no restlessness and problem, because when you keep your precept, you don't harm, you don't kill, you don't cheat, you don't deceive, and you will not do all those wrong things. Hence, you will have less problem, less fear, less worry, and less anxiety. You don't have to confront civil society's law, like police case and all those crime-related issues. And because of that, you can sleep well. You don't have to worry about people coming after you to take revenge. You are, therefore, more peaceful. If you violate your precept, you will have a lot of fear, a lot of worry, a lot of anxiety. Then when karmic negativity ripens, they will condition you into suffering and misery, causing your mind to be restless and miserable. That is why there is no peace within, and you become heedless. But once you keep your precept, your mind becomes more peaceful and calmer. That's why it's a source of true peacefulness. True peacefulness can bring about a lot of good mind state for you to develop the meditation. That's why after cultivating sila, samadhi kick in, because your mind has this quality, source of true peacefulness. Of course, the other two, source of joy and happiness and spiritual wealth, will also support you in your cultivation. But most important is you will start to have this peacefulness of mind, because you don't violate the precept, you don't have people coming after you. You can meditate so much easily. So because of that, when sila is in place, samadhi will kick in. Then samadhi will give rise to wisdom, which is panya. That's how the whole Noble Eightfold Path comes about. Then I talk about sila, samadhi, and panya. When you have sila and peacefulness of mind, Your mind states are more conducive for you to meditate. And because of that, you can develop samadhi. Samadhi is composed of two parts, two of the Noble Eightfold Path factors. Samadhi covers samasati and samasamadhi path factors. So you train your mind to be more and more peaceful, more and more mindful, more and more silent. The moment you are silent, you are already in sati. And when sati is stabilized, it becomes samadhi. So sati and samadhi can allow you to see things as they are. That is why once you have sila, samadhi will follow. Then your mind can see things as they are to develop wisdom. That's the reason why the Buddha also summarized the Noble Eightfold Path as sila, samadhi, and panya. Panya is wisdom leading to right view and right understanding. That's why Noble Eightfold Path first path factor is right view or right understanding. Samadhi. So when you develop right view, you can straighten your view. Then you will have less and less delusion. Then you will have right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and all the four right effort. And this is what morality or sila is all about. Sila is about developing virtue via your right speech, right action, and right thought. That's why you must go into the essential dhamma. What constitutes right speech? What constitutes right action? What constitutes right thought? Have you all gone into that? I don't have enough time to go into that. You find out yourself. What constitutes right speech? At least I can give you some example now. What are right speech? Of course, you know it's not the four type of wrong speech. Yeah? What are the four type of wrong speech? Yeah? Harsh speech? Wow, all this also cannot remember. Frivolous speech is the last one. Then, backbiting. Yeah? Say bad things about people. Yeah? Your harsh speech include angry, violent speeches. Yeah? Then backbiting. Then the last one is telling lie. So if you avoid these four, you only avoid, you know, you still don't know what constitutes right speech. Now I ask you, what are right speech? Huh? What are right speech? Ayo, you don't even know and cannot define it. You cannot put it into words. How are you going to cultivate right speech? Okay. Right timing, favorable speech, good. Okay. So at least you got a few points, but you still didn't tell me what is right speech. Understand? Timely, of course, is important. Yeah. Then after timely is favorable. What is favorable? You didn't explain. Then the last one you mentioned is wholesome. But it doesn't go into specific and detail. What you need is for you to have right speech. You must have right understanding, wisdom, so that you can arise the gentle, pleasant, and appropriate good speeches that brings about harmony, understand not? No more division, no more hurting people, making people unhappy, insult people, or you say all those sarcastic things, no more, because you are sincere. You are being very gentle, very pleasant in your speech. Then your speech are always appropriate and bring about harmony, help people to have faith, have confidence, calm people down. That's why you can do all this. You have right speech. Then advise people appropriately so that they can have the happiness, the joy within. Don't worry, this is not the end of the world. Life just began when you understand. And all these are reality of life and existence. Everybody got to go through, not only you. How you explain this with understanding, with the Dhamma, and appropriately, then you bring about faith, confidence, then you tell them, when you understand this, your life can become beautiful. You still have hope. You still can become beautiful. You don't have to always have this type of negative mind state. So fearful, so full of negativity. People who have suffering and depression, their mind state are actually very, very miserable. That's why they are heedless. That's why not easy to have right speech. Easy to say, speak appropriately at the right time and all those things. Of course, you have to see the condition. When they are willing to listen, then you talk. Then when you talk with right speech, with right thought, with right understanding, with the wisdom. Then you speak gently, pleasantly, with sincerity and kindness, goodness. That's why you rejoice, then you radiate love and metta, and people can feel you. And this is all very appropriate. That's why Noble Eightfold Path is about right thought, right speech, right action. Then if you go into all this, you will develop the understanding, then only you can cultivate. Otherwise, you cannot cultivate. That's why to cultivate Dana Sila is not easy. You need mindfulness. You need heedfulness. Then to start the Noble Eightfold Path also not easy. Right view alone will take you so long to understand. Then after that, you have to go into right thought, right speech, right action. First is, of course, the evil root, what constitutes greed. Of your selfishness, craving, covetousness, desire, possessiveness, clinging, grasping, they are part of greed. Positive craving, covetousness included. Then the evil roots of anger, hatred, they even include envy, jealousy, the slightest unhappiness, your dislike, your negative perception of things. That's why like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant reaction of mind. These are all the evil roots of greed and hatred, and they will become mental hindrance if you arise them. That's why essential desire and ill will. And all this is part of the cultivation. Then delusion is what? Not understanding the truth. Means you do not understand that the form and mind is not you, not real. It's impermanent, dependent, originating. There is he no you, he no me. There's a non-self, empty within. But you deludedly grasp and cling with the self-delusion. That's how delusion comes about. Not understanding the truth. Not understanding the law of karma. Not understanding how you function as a human being, the dependent origination. Not understanding that essential Dhamma essentially is the Four Noble Truths, because all the other essential Dhamma spin out from the Four Noble Truths. So all this is part and parcel of cultivation. If you have not understood all this, how do you start? You cannot start. Now I better read on a bit, otherwise I don't have time to finish. That's the reason why the Buddha summarized the Noble Eightfold Path as Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. Panya is wisdom leading to right view and right understanding. That's why Noble Eightfold Path, first path factor is Samadhi, right view or right understanding. So when you develop right view, you can straighten your view. Then you will have right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and all the four right effort. And this is what morality or Sila is all about. Sila is about developing virtue via your right speech, right action, and right thought. After that, your samadhi path factor, which is inclusive of sati, will take off to a new level of clear understanding, leading to a more stable right view. Then you will know how to meditate. Then your sati will become more refined. It will lead to more and more understanding, more clarity of mind, and more silence within. You have become more heedful. That is how you progress. So do not underestimate the importance of precepts or sila. Without sila, it's very difficult to go into meditation, which is samadhi. And without samadhi, wisdom can never arise. You will then come to realize that the whole of the teaching is indeed very simple. And the essential Dhamma are all spin-off from the essence of the Buddha's teaching, which are the Four Noble Truths. And they are all related and connected to your daily life. Apart from Sila, Samadhi, and Panya, you also need to develop the understanding of another essential Dhamma, another very important essential Dhamma. The whole of the Buddha's teaching points towards only one quality of mind, heedfulness. Before his parinibbana, he advised the monk to strive on with heedfulness. That's why he said, apamadena sampadayata, strive on with heedfulness. The reason why you need to be heedful is because according to the Buddha, if you are not heedful, you are as if dead. If you are not ever mindful to cultivate this meditation, as taught by him, which is the Noble Eightfold Path, then your mind will become heedless because it lacks this spiritual faculty of sati, or mindfulness. Hence, you will not have the ability to understand his spiritual teaching, for it lacks the spiritual faculty of sati and samadhi. Then, according to the Buddha, you have to understand clearly the importance of heedfulness and the danger of heedlessness. So heedfulness is the key to spiritual cultivation, and you have to understand what heedfulness is. To be heedful, the Buddha has defined it very clearly under Dhammapada verse 23. The constantly meditative, ever mindful and steadfast one will realize the supreme born-free Nibbana, which is the enlightenment. So you must train your mind not only to be mindful, but to be ever mindful. It means throughout the day, you must learn how to slow down your thinking, not your action and movement. Slow down your thinking. Decondition your heedless thinking through whatever skillful means that you have developed. Then learn to be silent more and more so that you are aware and heedful most of the time, so that you can transform the way you live your life from a heedless way of life into a new way of heedful living. Heedless means you are totally not aware. Then when you are not aware, you can never be mindful. If you are not mindful, how can you be ever mindful? If you do not have this ability to be ever mindful, you cannot cultivate the real Noble Eightfold Path meditation as taught by the Buddha. It is as simple as that. That's why the Buddha said the heedless are as if dead. If you don't have heedfulness, spiritually, you are as if dead. So no amount of thought-based meditation can free you. And this is a very important understanding. You have to train your mind to be more and more, to have more and more of this mindfulness or sati within, which is silent. Only then your mind can be very quiet. You will then come to realize that you are now much more sensitive, and you can become aware of many things. Then the next session is about mindfulness. Today I will go deeper into this topic, mindfulness. The silent mind without thought can feel very clearly. When you want to feel something, take for example the floor. If you are not silent, you cannot feel because there is no sensitivity. Just now Sister Ingby was discussing with me on how she did the lying down meditation. Then she realized that this statement of mine is very true. If you are not silent, you cannot be sensitive. You cannot have mindfulness to feel or to be aware. That is why when she was silent, she could feel all of the vibration within her own body. She could even feel how the sensation and phenomena in her leg developed and how certain part of her brain responded. Then she could see how they are all connected. That is the part of the brain that is responsible for sensing that particular phenomena. That's why I say you will understand yourself very clearly when you are aware. When you eat certain food, the taste bud tastes, and which part of your brain is activated, you will also know. Especially so if you take curry or some laksa, you will know from which part of the brain, the Shin Lat in Cantonese, meaning sour and hot, taste bud consciousness originate and come from, and how you sweat, and you will also know. then you will also understand very clearly how you function as a human being. The moment you are heedless, it means you think a lot. And most human beings' problems are like that, because they are so habitual in their heedless thinking. The five mental hindrances are so powerful. That's why throughout the day, these heedless thoughts, which are very active, keep on arising ceaselessly. If you do not believe me, you can check for yourself. Throughout the day, you think a lot. Your thoughts proliferate and run far ahead of whatever you do when you are not with the moment, when you are not mindful. As you do think, you think. As you walk, you think. Even as you sleep, you also think. The subconscious movements are all over within. But because you are heedless and you are never mindful, you cannot see all this movement and you cannot understand. That's why you tend to have this type of problem in life. Heedlessness leads to a lot of unnecessary problem and suffering in life, but there is no clarity at all. Your mind is always restless, in constant fear, and has a lot of worries and anxiety. Then you are attached to so many things. Everything you see, you hear, you smell, you taste, and you feel via your tactile consciousness, etc., appears so real to you. To you, they are like very real. Then you grasp, you cling, you accumulate without knowing that these are all your psychological memories that can bring about attachment leading to suffering and misery in the future. So as you develop this understanding, as you silen your mind more and more until you are able to be mindful in the midst of your daily life, then your life becomes different. You will start to have the ability to see many things. That's why now I can go deeper into this topic of daily mindfulness. If you don't believe me, you can try it out when you are free or even when you are here. Like now, when I look outside, my awareness can be all of phenomena outside because the mind is silent. The flow of nature, the flow of the trees, its leaves and branches, and even your human activity, and all the vibration within nature and everything else which is within the surrounding. This mind can become aware of them. And this mind is very sensitive because it is silent without thought within. But if I think a lot and it's preoccupied with all the thinking, emotion and respond to sense experience that is busy describing, reacting and commenting, then my nature cannot be with those phenomena. Because that nature, that awareness, can only be with the phenomena when it is silent. As man can only do one thing at a time. Either you are silent and aware within, or you are lost in thought. This awareness can be with all your physical, mental, and nature's phenomena or flow. Physical flow refers to physical body's action and movement. Mental flow refers to your mental movement, which are your sankhara and mental activity. Then nature's flow refers to nature's flow within nature. They can be the movement of the trees, the plants, the moving car, the vibration, and everything else that are within nature. Then even when everything is very quiet and very still, the essence of mind can still perceive the stillness or silence within nature. The essence of mind can also perceive the mental phenomena. Mental phenomena are your mental moments, like the moment of feeling upon contact, the moment of perception, moment of thinking or sankhara activity of mind, and the moment of consciousness. All these are possible because you are silent, hence the awareness can be with it. You can understand what is going on because there is clarity when your mind is silent. Then you can see them very clearly. But if you are heedless, you can never understand. You can never know because you cannot experience them. Things that you have no experience of, you cannot develop the understanding. That's why the heedless are as if dead. That's why if they don't train their mind to be heedful, to be more and more mindful and silent, there is no way they can penetrate the Dhamma. There is a lot more. You go back and read yourself. I only reached page 10. Then maybe I read this paragraph. You can attend retreat to silence yourself and use an object of meditation to fix your mind, to go into concentration, to go into absorption, jhana, etc. And because the setting and the retreat condition are very conducive, you can become very calm and very peaceful. But all these are conditioned state of mind. These are not something that can actually transform you and change you. Because to transform and change, you need wisdom, you need understanding, not all the calm state of mind. All these are part and parcel of the conditioned mind, the byproduct of a calm mind, which means calmness, meditation, or samatha, bhavana. You may label it as vipassana because you slow everything down. You slow down your action, your movement, and you hardly think because the environment you are in is very conducive. Then you use your thought to label, to note, to be with those activities, thinking that by practicing all this, you are meditating and you are cultivating vipassana, bhavana. To be honest, this is at least better than heedless thinking. But these are conditioned state because you are not natural. This is not a natural mind state of a free mind. And that calmness that you develop is not real sati or the meditative mind because it is just a conditioned state. It cannot develop real wisdom out of that because it is not a direct seeing via the silent mind. It is still thought-based. It is still Dhamma knowledge in action. There is no penetration of the Dhamma and understanding. Just like how I explained to Sister Ingby, I said, when you silence the mind, there is no word. And the mind that is silent will insight into and awaken to phenomena. Then when it insight in the truth and the reality, it just awakens. Then it can relate to the Dhamma. Then you straight away will understand what the Dhamma is. You will have the true understanding, no more just word, the interpretation of it, and not according to what the books say anymore. The example I give to her is swimming. Not until the day you try until you can experience that buoyancy, you will never understand what true buoyancy is, what swimming is. When you don't need the float to stay afloat, then you realize, hey, this is beautiful. What they say about the natural state of body being lighter than water, its buoyancy is so true. If I don't deludedly panic, if I have faith and allow the body to initially sink first, then upon reaching equilibrium, the buoyancy force will push it up. Then the body will surface. Then to swim, I just need to move my hands and legs. Then swimming becomes very easy. I don't have to worry about me drowning or sinking. I don't have to struggle in the water. I can swim with understanding. Then I am at peace. Then swimming becomes very easy, graceful. No more splashing of water, no more panic movement or struggling to stay afloat. So when you experience that buoyancy and flotation, it is just like you experience your silent mind, the true mind. Then you realize, hey, the true mind without delusion is already naturally peaceful, still, silent and meditative. I don't have to do anything to reach that state, just like swimming. Then you read yourself, then what happened and others think. There's a lot of essential penetrative teaching there. Yeah? I better leave it to you. We are at only page 12. That's why you may never really appreciate until you read the transcript with understanding. You think just Dhamma sharing within that 1-2 hour dana. When you read through the transcript, you realize what are the real teaching inside there. Okay, I better end my talk because I'm getting very late. Okay, thank you so much for your patience. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. I hope you all can really benefit from this because this is a very useful topic. It can help you in your cultivation. I realize a lot of people go direct into meditation without understanding all this. They don't even know how to start cultivating all this. Dana, sila, then the real bhavana. Because all this essential Dhamma is still not understood how to cultivate. You have not developed the understanding of it. Whatever you don't understand, you cannot do. That's it. Finish. Okay, now we open up. Maybe one question that you have, huh? So that we can end before 10:15. Huh? Okay, yeah, while I have a drink. Huh? If you don't have question, maybe we end. Huh? Okay. We do the sharing of merits and the transfer of merits. Huh? Okay. Sharing of merits is the devas. Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva chirang rakantu lokasasana ittavata cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang me nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo Imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya sadu sadu sadu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to the Lord Buddha, including Bodhisattva and all the worthy ones. Then we end. Thank you. This is the offering from the Tiratana Center. Huh? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, yeah.
Before you leave, please help yourself to some refreshments outside. Thank you.